Hello and welcome to the World Soccer Talk podcast, your weekly dose of talking about watching soccer on TV, online and apps. Coming up on episode 45, we discuss why this Premier League season is sucking the enjoyment of watching good soccer, news about the USA's final two World Cup qualifiers on US TV, more details about Fox's plans for next summer's World Cup, as well as a big boost in TV ratings for the Bundesliga on US TV. Plus, we have a ton of letters from you, the listeners, in our mailbag section. My name is Christopher Harris, aka The Gaffer, and I'm joined today by Kartik Krishnaiyer. Kartik, what's the sense in terms of the build-up to this USA-Panama game, which is going to be in Orlando, just down the road from us?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of nervousness in general among U.S. fans, which is not a great indication of how they feel about the program right now, because it is a good indication. I shouldn't say it's not a great indication. It's an indication that they don't feel great at the program right now. Craig Burley keeps saying, re-emphasizing every day on ESPN FC, if you're ending your World Cup qualification with Panama at home and Trinidad and Tobago away, nobody who's fighting for a World Cup berth on the planet has an easier road. So you should take 6 points. You should qualify. That doesn't mean that there aren't massive cracks in the program. But I would say that there's a lot of nervousness and a lot of internal discussion going on, which is, you know, where I have a conflict, because I think there has to be significant changes within the U.S. soccer structure. And my fear is the U.S. wins these two games against inferior opposition, games that they should win with a B team, quite frankly. Well, maybe not against Panama. Trinidad and Tobago, yes. And we will not make the kind of progressive reforms to advance the development of players in the sport in this country that need to be made. So there is part of me, and people are going to get very angry, hopefully you don't shut this podcast out, there is part of me that says the United States should miss the World Cup, because otherwise we've been going in circles for 20 years mm-hmm. in terms of our player development and how we structure our pro leagues, and more importantly, how we structure our youth leagues. I know Development Academy, everyone thinks was this great leap forward, but there's still a lot of issues in the identification of players, the accessibility, that sort of thing, both on the boys and girls side, that need to be fixed. So, my preference would obviously be to be in the World Cup for the U.S., but if they don't make it, I think there's a lot of positive to come from them not making it, potentially.
Yeah, it's you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't in some ways. I mean, it's in terms of timing for the U.S. soccer USSF president race, which is going to be in January. The timing is perfect in terms of trying to make change. Even if the U.S. qualifies, we know, I think all of us knows that there's a lot of problems. If they don't qualify, then that's a whole different story in terms of what's going to happen.
Right, and I think there will be a talking point coming out of this. Major League Soccer is becoming a better and better league because of the number of foreign players. We've talked about this, I don't know, maybe every week on this show. Now, there are very few standout American players left in MLS. It's mostly foreign players. Alexi Lawless goes on record yesterday saying it's not MLS's responsibility to develop American players. Okay. If that's the case, which has been the Premier League's premise, and we're going to get to the Premier League in our future topic of the week, I don't know where the U.S. turns, because if MLS is on this course where they're all going to be clubs like Atlanta United with very few, you know, Greg Garza obviously starts for them, but very few significant American players that are in the national team pool, but a top team, notwithstanding the loss to Minnesota the other night, then the U.S. Soccer Federation is going to have to look for another option for player development. So we'll see. A lot of talking points are going to come out of this, regardless of the results.
Yeah. So definitely, we'll be previewing some of the coverage that's going to be coming up for these final two games in a little bit, and then also, I'm sure next week's podcast we'll be discussing not just only the U.S. performance, but also in terms of the broadcast from ESPN and beIN Sports for these games. So, Kartik, let's kick it off. Actually, for listeners who haven't had a chance to listen to the show before, and this may be their first time, what we do is we talk about the coverage of soccer. Whether it's on television, online, or apps. And we oftentimes talk about the broadcasting and the commentating how well or not so well that's going for a lot of these broadcasters, as well as cord cutting, giving advice and giving some tips in terms of how to be able to cut the cord and watch all of the soccer you want. So, Kartik, let's kick it off by just talking in terms of what you've been watching this past week.
Yeah, started the week with last Thursday with the Bate Borislav Arsenal game, Ross Fletcher and Alexi Lalas. I thought it was a good broadcast. Lalas is a hit or miss. I mean, he's either really good or he's really bad. He's into a broadcast and into a game, or he's just not interested, right? And I think we talk about this all the time. Yep. He was into this game. He was into seeing some of Arsenal's younger players and how Wenger and Arsenal would embrace Europa League. So he had a good day. He was good. And Fletcher, as usual, was good. So this was a good broadcast. It was an entertaining game. That game was followed by the Everton game on Fox or on FS1. And that was a good broadcast. Keith Costigan doing an Everton game. Costigan's been working incredible hours, it seems, for Fox recently. But again, another disappointing performance for Everton. So that was a tough one. Then on Saturday, I watched the Huddersfield Spurs match. You know, I want to say I watched a Bundesliga match on Friday, but I'm blanking out on it. So we'll just skip that. It obviously wasn't memorable enough for me to discuss. But Huddersfield Spurs, wish I hadn't woken up for that match. Although Spurs were looking very, very good. Turned from NBC, the Premier League games at 10 o'clock Eastern just weren't very appealing. Dortmund was on FS1. Watched that game, Augsburg and Dortmund, and it was a very good game. Augsburg gave BVB all they could handle, but Dortmund won. They're on 19 points. They're plus 19 in goal difference under Peter Bosz, their new manager, and 5 points clear in the Bundesliga. So looking like, at least early on, they're one of the most formidable sides in Europe, even though they're not necessarily playing well in Champions League. Go back to NBCSN for Chelsea-Man City. Disappointing that this game was on NBCSN. Maybe we can discuss that later on, rather than being on NBC over the air, because I believe there was the president. Yes, there was the President's Cup going on, which, if you don't know, is a contrived event. Now it doesn't seem as contrived because it's about 2 decades old, but it's between the U.S. team in golf and the world team. But the world team doesn't include players from the European Union because, of course, they play in the Ryder Cup. So kind of confusing. It's players from Australia, New Zealand, South Africa, wherever else they play golf, Argentina, India, they're just these random places where golf is a commonplace sports outside of Europe. So to me, it's disappointing that this game was preempted for that. Then I have to say, I mean, great match, right? Particularly from my perspective as a City supporter, there is no post game show. And, you know, I'm dying to hear what Musto and Earl are going to talk about, particularly given Musto's understanding of Pep Guardiola's tactics and having covered him, particularly when he was at Barcelona. But also, I think Musto knows a thing or two about Bayern, but really covered him closely in those days when he was with ESPN, when he was at Barcelona. He has more of an insight into Pep's tactics and Pep's mind than just about anyone who covers the Premier League, whether it be in this country or in the UK, honestly. No post-game show, right? They went off to auto racing or something, and then no match of the day. By the time NBC comes back the next morning for Arsenal Brighton, the focus is on Arsenal Brighton. We never got any kind of significant analysis from one of the biggest matches of the season, a season between the a team that's won 2 of the last 3 titles and the team that is the favorite this season on NBC. And to me, that's just very disappointing. I mean, what are your thoughts about that?
Yeah, well, this one, the worst goals on. So, and it's interesting.
But it was on NBC Sports.com.
Right, I believe
right. So.
So
if you're in front of a television, right. Yeah, that makes it very difficult, and it's not seamless after a game.
Yeah, definitely. For me, it was, again, I'm back in AYSO land, so oftentimes a lot of my Saturday mornings now are spent at the fields with my kids, kind of watching them play, getting them ready for games, etc. So if at any time I'm kind of time shifting, this is it. This is the time of year I'm doing it. So I was able to watch the West Ham United against Swansea game on NBC Sports Gold. Then I had a rush to a game, and then I came back. But by the time I got back, it was, I think, about 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock, actually, maybe even 5 o'clock. So I was able to watch Goal Zone through Fubo. I was able to go in and kind of just backtrack and watch it through there. So actually, with it being on Fubo, though, Kartik... No. I'm sorry. So I had a login to the NBCSports.com website using my Fubo login, and then I was able to watch Goal Zone through there. So yeah, you're right.
It wasn't on NBC television.
Okay. Yeah, right. It's definitely a missed opportunity, especially with such a high caliber game. I mean, best game of the season thus far in a high profile game. It's just another missed opportunity for NBC.
It's just the lack of consistency that's bothering me. And I think what happened is when NBC got the Premier League rights, they didn't have that many sporting properties on NBCSN. Now they have more and more. So their times are preempting post-game shows. They're not able to, in this case, accommodate. It's funny, whatever game is scheduled for 5:30 UK time, they throw on NBC over the air. Finally, one week where they can't, they get the biggest game of the season to this point. So
I guess in a way though, for us to be complaining about missing the post-game coverage shows how well NBC has done in terms of analysis. Because if this was Fox, we wouldn't care. We'd be like, hey, missed the post-match, who cares? There's probably very little analysis or any intelligence going into that type of post-match broadcast. So I guess it's a good problem to have. But it's interesting too, because think back to when we first started watching NBC Sports Network at that time. I think I had never watched that channel until the Premier League came on. And I started watching, of course, the Premier League on NBC Sports Network at the time. And most of the programming they had outside of that was like outdoors programming. So they had hunting, they had fishing, and they had some of the infomercials or commercials they had. They had one for this, I think, knife that could pierce through fish, and you'd see all this, and through animals, and you'd see all this blood and carcass on the show, like minutes before the Premier League would kick off. So in many ways, NBC has, in terms of the Premier League, has it's elevated their coverage, where they're being able to show a lot more sports, and it's made the whole entire channel much better and more popular. But at the same time, like you said, Kartik, it's made it where they got so much. They have other sports programming that kind of high profile that it does run into what they're covering and kind of shortcuts the Premier League coverage to a certain extent.
And I think this is a byproduct of the end of auto racing season, the end of the golf season. It's over now for all intents and purposes with the President's Cup and their coverage of Notre Dame football. So they even bumped their Notre Dame kickoff against Miami of Ohio back to 5 or 5:30 because of President's Cup this weekend. So I think there is a confluence of events that puts them in this box. They'll probably come out of it in the next few weeks and have a more orderly programming schedule. But it's just frustrating because there was no match of the day Saturday night, at least that my DVR picked up. Now, Sunday, it did pick things up, but there was no analysis on that because they were trying to cram all of the games from the weekend, not just the three Sunday games, into their post game. So that was frustrating. Moving on, watched the North Carolina-Orlando game on the Go90 platform, women's game, NWSL game, was a showdown, a potential preview of the NWSL Cup final, which will be in a week and a half in Orlando. And Orlando got out to a 2-0 lead, Lynn Williams, and North Carolina came back, evened it up at 2-2. Wasn't the greatest broadcast, not the best camera work, but was a game I wanted to watch. The next day, Hertha Berlin Bayern on FS1, really good game. Hertha Berlin gets a point, another more drop points for Bayern, who now since this that game have or it's been reported that Jan Pynkins is coming back to the club for one more go around as manager. Apparently, according to Ralf Hanningstein, Hoeneß wanted Rummenigge wanted Tuchel, and Hoeneß wanted I'm blanking on his name, the young manager at Hoffenheim. So they couldn't agree on those two. Nagelsmann, yeah.
Right.
So they went for the compromise, which is to bring Heinkens in for the rest of the season and let those two duke it out. And probably they'll hire one of the two after the season, but it'll be the job of one of the two big wigs at Bayern to convince the other of their choice.
I would say they'll cut – I mean, just kind of just to catch up a little bit in terms of what I've been watching too, but that Hertha Berlin Bayern game, and this is for the first time in a very, very long time for me, I made a conscious effort to actually watch this game instead of watching a Premier League game, which was on at the same time. And this is the one I selected, and actually I wasn't able to watch the whole match because I had my son's birthday party, so I had to rush off to that. But instead of watching the Everton-Burnley match, I watched this one, and I thought the coverage from Fox was fantastic. Everything from Kate Abdo and Eric Rinaldo dressed up in Lederhosen, live at the Oktoberfest event in New York City, and just the analysis and the amount of attention to detail, it's just first class. And the match itself, I mean, that's the great thing about Bayern actually being in trouble right now. It's making the Bundesliga more watchable.
Yeah, it's making it far more watchable. And Warren Barton was better in this game as the co-commentator than he had been the previous time I'd seen him for a Bayern game, which was a couple weeks ago. And I thought he was terrible in that match. It was interesting they left Ian Joy and Alexi Lalas in L.A., and they didn't take them to New York as well, along with Abdo and Wijnaldum. That, to me, was a bit awkward, but I agree. It was a good broadcast. I think Fox is showing a stronger commitment to the Bundesliga this season. Perhaps it's losing Champions League that's pushing them into this position where, okay, they have one major non-American club sporting property that they're going to carry beyond their coverage of World Cup 2018, and it is the Bundesliga. Why don't we make the most of it? And they would have two more seasons on their contract, if I'm counting correctly, yes, after the World Cup. So for whatever reason, they're making a greater commitment to it, and it's paying off. Also on Sunday, just real quickly, I watched the Milan-Roma game. Good broadcast from VN, just a dull match, which is happening a lot in Italy these days when matches don't involve Juventus or Napoli. Napoli is fantastic to watch. Juve is Juve. The rest of the league is kind of boring at this point. Philly Seattle was, to me, the epitome of a bad MLS game, which is a shame because there's been a lot of really good MLS games the last few weeks. Philadelphia won this game, surprisingly, but this wasn't a great advert for the league. This game was on ESPN. And then real quickly, ESPN FC this week in studio, they've had Stuart Robson in studio all week, and I'm always blown away by Stuart Robson's knowledge. Even when he's on the BT feeds of Bundesliga games that we get, and NBC doing Premier League games, with the exception of Arsenal games, obviously, and then the Champions League games we get on Fox. But he is in studio this week, and he seems to be able to hold his own in any conversation about the U.S. men's national team or Major League Soccer. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know how he does it. I mean, he must watch so much soccer.
He must do nothing but watch soccer.
Yeah, yeah. And maybe he's single. Maybe he's the type of guy who's, you know, I mean, it's his job. He seems to love it. But he is so, he's such a smart guy. We'll have to get him on the podcast one of these days, Kartik, and have a chat with him. Because I don't think we've interviewed, well, maybe we did interview him way back when on the EPL Talk podcast. But it's been many, many years.
Yeah, and I think maybe the most interesting thing he said this week was not about the men's national team. This is the takeaway. I'll end on this note. The whole Cavani-Neymar thing is flared back up, and Robson ended the show, I think it was on Tuesday, basically saying – it even floored Craig Burley because it was even off the charts for something Burley would say – that, hey, if I were Cavani, I would let Neymar know in training. And Dan Thomas asked him, well, you're going to talk to him? He said, no, I'll send a message through a tackle. That's what Cavani should do.
That's excellent.
And that's how they ended the show. It was great.
Wow. All right. So in terms of what I've been watching this past week, Kartik, Bate Borisov against Arsenal. Let me backtrack. I'm still, again, same as last weekend, I'm still in search of a really good soccer match. So I've been channel flipping a lot to try and find some really good football. So I started off with Bate Borisov against Arsenal. I watched the first 25 minutes, and by that point, Arsenal were 3-0 ahead. I was like, okay, this is boring. So I switched over to Nice against Vitesse Arnhem and watched this one on ESPN3 using Sling Orange. And by halftime, it was 2-0 to Nice.
Can I ask you a question real quickly about this? This is a little bit off topic, but I figure people will be interested in hearing this. Do you have any issue with watching Vitesse in European competition because they are essentially a Chelsea B team just loaded up with Chelsea loanees?
No, but for me, I'm not watching it that closely. So I'm watching it. So it depends. Some matches I'll watch in terms of, knowing each player on the team and looking at individual players. This one I was just watching for the pure enjoyment of it, or in the search of pure enjoyment. So in terms of kind of anything about the club, I'm just watching it for the football.
Okay, yeah, because there are people who say, out of purity, you shouldn't be watching Vitesse in European football. I take a different answer. I think, well, great. Great for the fans of Vitesse. They haven't been in Europe for a while. Mm-hmm. And if it's because of loan players from Chelsea, which we know they have an arrangement with Chelsea where they get players on loan every season, some significant ones. Matt Miazga, the American internationals, they're now on loan from Chelsea, among others. I say more power to them, but continue.
Yeah, so I switched off from Nice against Vitesse and then watched Cologne against Red Star Belgrade against this Europa League and watched the second half on Fox Soccer Plus through Fubo. And this match, Red Star won it 1-0, but I just can't believe that Cologne didn't score. They hit the post, I think, three or four times in the second half. Cologne actually looked pretty good, and I was just shocked at the result. It's just one of those ones where I'm like, I can't believe that Red Star won it. Watched Everton against Apollon, and oh my God. It's getting worse and worse for Everton. We'll get to that in a little bit.
Yeah, and I sensed in that game, Costigan and Friedel were running out of negative things to say about Everton, right?
Yeah.
Because it was so bad. It was such a bad performance. I mean, this is a good lesson in commentating, actually. I should have mentioned it when I brought up the game. How do you get through a match where you know that 99% of the people watching your broadcast are supporting a certain team? They're not watching for Apple Elm. They're watching for Everton. And they're just so off the mark. They're so terrible that the viewer wants you to convey that sense of anger and frustration. But you have to do it in a professional way. And I think they did a pretty good job. It was just not an enviable place to be because, again, I think 99% of the people watching that broadcast in the U.S. were probably Everton fans.
Yeah, absolutely. Maybe even more than that, more like 99%. So moving on, though, and I'll get back to Everton in a minute, but moving on, I did watch the West Ham against Swansea game on NBC Sports Gold on Saturday. And, oh, my God, no problems with the service, but what an awful game this was between two really awful teams. Swansea, at this rate, will be going down and getting relegated if they continue to play like this. There's absolutely no creativity in midfield. West Ham wasn't much better either. Renato Sanchez, so far, is a bust. I mean, just really, really not at Premier League level. And just in terms of, giving the ball away too many times, just losing it in possession, not tracking back, not closing.
You see why Bayern has the problems they have when you think about him being one of their big young hopes. Because, look, this Bayern team now we're finding was heavily reliant on Xavi Alonso and Philipp Lahm still. And still now on Robin and Ribery. It's no mystery. And I know this is Swansea related, but it's also to me Bayern related. It's no mystery. Dortmund has just blown by them now in the Bundesliga and looks I don't want to say a sure bet. You can never be sure, but a pretty safe bet based on what we've seen thus far to win the league in Germany.
Yeah, and for Swansea, I mean, thank God that they got him on loan and didn't actually sign him. So, I mean, he could get better. He has some raw skill, but is far from the finished article. So I moved on, watched Goalzone, as I mentioned before. And then on the Sunday, I watched Arsenal against Brighton. Another pretty uneventful game. A really comfortable 2-0 win for Arsenal in this one. Watched the Hertha Berlin Bayern game, at least the first half. Was very impressed with that. And then I watched Barcelona against Las Palmas. And this one was an interesting one because of the whole Catalan referendum. Well, Barcelona wanted the game to be postponed. And then I think beIN Sports announced that the game was postponed. So I didn't turn it on. And then I think about 20 minutes before the game started, the league refused to postpone the game, so the decision was made to go ahead and kick off the match, but play it behind closed doors. So what you had was a TV broadcast, I mean, live from the Nou Camp, with Barcelona, Las Palmas, and Phil Shane and Gary Bailey commentating in an empty stadium. And and again, too, we've seen a few of these closed-door matches, I think earlier this year, or maybe was it in the summer, with Beşiktaş playing in Europa League qualifier, I think it was, playing in front of an empty stadium because of fan problems. But to me, it's just so eerie watching a game played in relative silence. It's completely turned off.
Like this. Never anything like this where you know it's closed doors because there's stuff going on in the streets.
Yeah.
Which is being reported on the news that you're not comfortable with. And then obviously Barcelona itself is was for many years the only real legal form of Catalan nationalism. Look, there's been a lot of discussion this week about is Barcelona going to end up in Liga in a year or two, or maybe even the Premier League, but more logically the French League, because of this situation. Really, we don't know. We don't know if Barcelona and Espanyol and Girona and the other clubs in the Catalan region are going to remain in La Liga beyond this season. Honestly, I mean, I think they probably will. But if the Catalan Parliament makes the decision that this referendum is legally binding and begins the process of trying to assert their sovereignty, I think those football clubs will probably be thrown out of La Liga.
Yeah, this is one to watch, absolutely, Kartik, because, I mean, La Liga really is nothing without Barcelona. I mean, essentially, yeah. Then you got a one-team league. So, I mean, La Liga wouldn't be unwatchable, but it would be, I mean, not the same by any means. And I couldn't see Barcelona and the other teams in the Catalan region playing in Ligue 1. I mean, if anything, this would probably maybe speed up the opportunity for a Super League, kind of a European Super League, having a Barcelona featured in this amongst the other teams. But, this is going to be a thorny issue and definitely one to watch. And in Spain...
And I know the whole issue of Catalonia is within FIFA is a big deal, because I know the U.S., you remember this, it was about 10 years ago where Sunil Gulati arranged a friendly with Catalonia, with Johan Cruyff, actually was still alive at the time and was running the Catalan Federation, unofficial federation, right? And the U.S. had to cancel that friendly because Spain basically said, hey, we won't play the United States any competition if you go ahead with that friendly. So I remember that as an issue. And if Catalonia applied for FIFA membership, if there would be some sort of problem. And we already see the reception Piqué is getting this week in Madrid at Spain training.
And that's the thing, though, too, is Spain is not going to back off on this one. So they're going to come down hard on the Catalonia area. So they're not going to let Catalonia go. You mean, so it's... Yeah, this is a kind of a political thorny issue, definitely with soccer ramifications, but definitely one to keep an eye on. And I'm sure next week we'll probably have more to talk about in regards to this. And then lastly, Kartik, just two more things. So I watched the first half of the Barcelona Las Palmas game, switched it over because playing in front of an empty stadium, it's just there's no atmosphere. It's not fun to watch on television. I switched over to Burnley against Everton in the second half. And the only reason I wanted to watch this game is to see if this was going to be Ronald Koeman's last game in charge of Everton. And it's not a bad team. It's just the team is playing badly in terms of just low in confidence, just grabbing at straws. I mean, just really, just not functional. Really, it's just a complete mess. But I wanted to watch it just in case that was Koeman's last game in charge. And then last but not least, Newcastle against Liverpool. I watched, I think, the first half of this one, but then had a run to get everything ready for my son's birthday party. And I missed the second half. But from what I saw in the first half, it was pretty decent. But I was still missing that kind of complete 90 minutes of really great football. And we'll get back into that in a little bit in one of our later segments. Kartik, let's move on to TV streaming news.
Yeah, so Sports Illustrated earlier this week revealed a couple more details about Fox's World Cup plans for this upcoming summer in Russia. Fox will be sending 450 people to Russia to work the production of the tournament, which is the largest production in the network's history. Plus, they'll be requesting an on-camera interview with Vladimir Putin. Let's see if they get that. Putin has done one U.S. interview in recent years, and it was with Oliver Stone, which, well, by the way, I mean, I would recommend, if people are interested in politics, them watching that. It was on Showtime. If you get Showtime or have access to Showtime, it was well done and it was produced well. But Stone is sympathetic, right, to Putin. So that's why or sympathetic to basically any kind of like anti-American cause. So he did an interview with Hugo Chavez a few years ago. So that's the kind of person he sits down with. I don't know if Fox will get that. There's also, I think, been more of an effort to get the teams ready for the World Cup on Fox. This is the thing I forgot to mention in the last segment. Mark Folwell and Tony Miola did the Bundesliga game on Friday, and they're developing chemistry as a team, as a partnership. So I think I wouldn't be surprised if that's one of the broadcast teams that's sent to Russia for this World Cup.
Yeah, I love Tony Miola as a player and as a person. He seems like a great guy, but to me, he's not the finished article. So if you're putting in kind of a B level into your World Cup coverage, and that's disappointing because there's lots of opportunities.
Let me say this. I mean, all these former U.S. goalkeepers have become commentators. Miola, who I think has got some qualities, Friedel, who's got some qualities. Casey Keller is again in the ESPN FC studio this week, Chris. Mm-hmm. He is on fire. I mean, he knows his stuff in and out and isn't afraid to say things. Now, I've heard this from fans in MLS of Seattle who say, hey, he's too critical of the league. He's too critical of all this stuff. I wonder if Keller isn't getting the kind of gigs that others, guys he played with get because of his tenor towards these things and being critical. And I would suggest people watch ESPN FC if they want some really good critical analysis from a former U.S. international of our system, of the mistakes that are being made, maybe squad selection tactically, and then just some general observations. This is the second or third straight international break where he has really impressed me.
All right, so moving on to other news. Coverage plans for the final two USA World Cup qualifiers. So Friday night at 7 o'clock Eastern time on ESPN2. The kickoff time is supposed to be about 7:30, 7:35. Ian Dark and analyst Taylor Twellman will provide match commentary with sideline reporters Julie Stewart-Binks and Sebastian Salazar. And then you got host Max Bretos and analyst Casey Keller and Hercules Gomez will be on site for pregame, halftime, and postgame shows. And they will also contribute segments on SportsCenter and ESPN FC throughout the day. Then on Tuesday night at 8 o'clock Eastern, it's Trinidad and Tobago against the United States. And this game is going to be on beIN Sports and Universo. So beIN Sports for the English language and Universo for the Spanish language, depending on what happens on Friday night. Well, Tuesday night is going to matter anyway. Even if the U.S. wins on Friday, that's going to make Tuesday more important. And the U.S. is probably going to need at least a draw out of that final game to make it through. Two wins would be perfect. But in terms of who's going to be announcing this game and who's actually going to be the talent, beIN Sports has not made an announcement yet. But if you do want to watch this game, which most of us will in the United States, be sure to make your plans early so you can be sure to watch this one. beIN Sports is available in a lot of places, but if not, we've got all the TV listings and links on worldsoccertalk.com.
Right, and of course you can, as you said, watch the game on Universo, which I think a lot of people who don't get BN Sports might get and not realize they get that channel.
Yeah, one more thing, Kartik, too, is this weekend is the FIFA U17 World Cup, and it kicks off Friday, October 6th, and it goes through till Saturday, October 28th. The TV coverage will be on FS1, FS2, and Fox Soccer Plus. Plus Telemundo, Universo, and the Telemundo Deportes and Vivo app will broadcast all the matches live, presenting more than 110 hours of coverage across platforms. And this tournament is going to be hosted in India.
Yeah, a big moment for Indian football after the India has qualified for one tournament that I can recall in the last 30 or 40 years, which was the 2011 Asian Cup in Qatar, and didn't do very well. But this is a big moment for Indian football to be hosting this competition. With ratings down, moving on, the Columbus Crew has agreed to an extended 2018 television deal with Sinclair, which includes a number of local affiliates. This is a continuation of the deal they've had this year, but their ratings have been down locally. And this package allows them to show games on a couple of local affiliates, including the My 35 affiliate, I believe it is, My TV affiliate, and a couple of other local over-the-air channels that are owned by Sinclair Broadcasting.
Yeah, and one of the quotes in the article that we were reading from the Columbus Dispatch says, from one of the executives, says, consecutive 0.1 ratings during our push for the playoffs is a humble reminder and source of motivation for me personally, but it directly speaks out to our need to battle for relevance on TV and at the box office. So it looks like in terms of TV ratings and tickets are down in Columbus, in a market that used to be a flagship market for MLS, and unfortunately is going through some tough times.
This has happened through a lot in a lot of places where MLS has been around for 20 years. Columbus, D.C. D.C.'s getting a new stadium next year, so they'll get a bump. But you see it even in Los Angeles. San Jose, the league left for a few years, but it's in spite of having a new stadium there, I think the level of support and interest is very stagnant. Colorado, et cetera. It's worrying because we constantly talk about how well Seattle does and Orlando does and Atlanta does, but they're just markets that are being left behind in this new MLS.
Yeah, well, New England Revolution is
New England's the biggest example. that makes Columbus look very good, actually.
Which is true. Which is sad, but they've turned into a laughingstock. I mean, it's a joke on and off the field, and nothing seems to ever get done. So it's for everything that MLS is doing right, there's still a lot of huge issues that they're not addressing. Moving on, Kartik, we talked about before earlier in this podcast about NBC's challenge in just trying to have enough a lot of competition from a lot of other sports competing with the Premier League and kind of reducing the amount of Premier League coverage at times. Well, the good news is that F1, Formula One rights will move from NBC to ESPN in a new multi-year rights deal. And this means we're less likely to see some of those Sunday morning EPL games bumped to CNBC in the future, and it's more likely that they'll continue to be on NBCSN. And then, Kartik, last but not least, one more piece of news.
Yeah, that's the Univision Deportes Network has announced that their TV ratings I found this kind of curious when I saw this because it's just for Q3. They're up more than 50% in Q3 2017 compared to Q3 of last year, 2016. This third quarter saw UDN average 187,000 viewers, beating English language competitors Fox Sports 1 and NBCSN. I think a lot of this has to do with the Liga MX matches. On UDN, telecasts of Liga MX football matches averaged 255,000 total viewers, besting MLB on the MLB network by 14%. MLS on Univision's flagship channels, Univision and Unimas, averaged 210 total viewers, up 24% from the prior year. This has been the best quarter ever for MLS football network viewership on the Univision networks. In fact, Q3 2017 is on pace to be MLS's most viewed season season ever on the leading Spanish language network. Univision has had MLS rights for most of its history. There was a short period of time where the rights passed to Telemundo. So this is basically like 17 or 18 seasons, which would be the best. Bundesliga, which is the latest sports property to join Univision Deportes' ever-growing portfolio, debuted with a bang this quarter. The September 17th face-off between Borussia Dortmund and Cologne on Unimas, which saw obviously the top team in the league, Dortmund, defeating Cologne, who's the worst team in the league thus far this season, maybe one of the worst teams in top flight in Europe, 5-0, delivered 159,000 total viewers, making it the most viewed Bundesliga face-off on any sports network in quarter three of 2017. Although there were, I have to say, and we'll get into this in a minute, there are a lot of Fox games in Bundesliga that have cleared 100,000 this year. So it may just be a matter of time before Fox delivers a game on FS1 that bests 159,000. Maybe not, but that's it's attainable, whereas a year ago would have sounded absurd to even think contemplate it.
Yeah, that's definitely the goal. And then let's move on, actually. It's a perfect segue to move on to TV ratings. So the big match we just talked about earlier in this broadcast was the Hertha Berlin against Bayern Munich game. And that one had, I believe, this is the best number for the Bundesliga this season as of yet, and probably actually since the Bundesliga began on US TV through Fox, on cable, not on over the air. But Hertha Berlin against Bayern Munich had 236,000 people that watched that game. 129,000 of those were on Unimas. And then you had 24,000 on Univision Deportes Network, and then 83,000 on FS1.
How do you explain bigger numbers in Spanish than in English for some Bundesliga games?
I think it's one of those things that, Spanish network is more soccer-centric anyway. So I think in terms of just the population of the United States, I think soccer fans in general, especially Hispanic soccer fans, are more likely to be watching Unimas or UDN or Univision. And if there's a soccer game on, they'll watch it. Versus FS1, where you got a mix of, what, NASCAR fans, baseball fans, you mean football fans.
Yeah.
And then soccer fans. It's kind of a different crowd. And on the Univision side, you mean soccer definitely by far is the most popular sport. On FS1, soccer's probably, what, number three or number four most popular sport. So, yeah. And it was Bayern Munich too, so I mean it's definitely that's going to attract a lot of people. But so the numbers, that's a great number for the Bundesliga overall. The other number two, Kartik, that I was looking at, which is impressive, was the Orlando City against FC Dallas game. This was on Univision Deportes Network and the Univision Over the Air Network, which usually is massive numbers, but still 313,000 people watched this game for an MLS game on I think it was on Saturday afternoon. And then the big numbers, Kartik, 955,000 watched Toluca against Club America on Univision and Univision Deportes Network. Chelsea against Man City on NBCSN and Universo was 664,000. And any other numbers jump out at you, Kartik?
Yeah, that Orlando game, that game is now shrouded in controversy as FC Dallas appears to have fielded an ineligible player. So we'll see what happens with that. I thought that the 184,000 for Arsenal Brighton was particularly poor, even though it was a 7 a.m. Eastern time game. Arsenal is, I thought, one of the drivers of interest in the Premier League. If Manchester United were playing in that time slot, I think we would have seen 300,000 viewers, honestly, even though it's 4 a.m. on the East Coast. So I don't know. There's so many frustrated Arsenal fans now, and I hate to keep harping on this, but yeah. I think there are a lot of Arsenal fans who just aren't going to make the effort to get up to watch them that early.
Well, I think the other thing, though, too, I mean, you look at, say, the last five years, definitely, is that without any shadow of a doubt is that Tottenham Hotspur have marketed themselves much, much better than Arsenal has. So Spurs have been coming here on tours more often. They've been interacting with the media more often. And Arsenal, you mean coming over for that? I mean, one game here, one game there. It's a very...
Oh, I think in just in general, again, every week it seems like I meet in my other lines of work Spurs fans and newer fans to the Premier League or predominantly Spurs fans. Some are Everton fans. But I think Spurs have probably marketed themselves, Chris, maybe this is a conversation for another time, better than any European club in the United States, given their limitations and their resources. You could make that argument.
Yeah. And then looking at the TV numbers too, 249,000 people tuned in for the Huddersfield Spurs game on NBCSN and Universal.
At a similar time.
Right, exactly. So
that's a good point.
Yeah. And one more number to throw out there is the Newcastle against Liverpool match on NBCSN and Telemundo. That one had 606,000 viewers. Over 200,000 of those viewers were on Telemundo. So without any shadow of a doubt, again, the Spanish language numbers are really boosting everything from the Premier League to Liga MX, of course, but also the Bundesliga, some positive numbers, and MLS, of course.
Yeah, I think Latino soccer fans in the United States will watch soccer if it's on television. That's the thing we're finding.
Yeah.
They don't care where the league is from, what league it is. They're so knowledgeable about the sport that if they flip on a Premier League game or a Bundesliga game, there are two or three or four players they'll recognize regardless, even if they're not particularly interested in Newcastle United. They'll be able to follow the game. So this is a real positive, I think, as we try and push soccer into the mainstream realm in American sports. I'm going to sound off here for a second, Chris, indulge me. I really wish the mainstream English language media and the people who host SportsCenter and write for the websites and who host shout shows on FS1 and on ESPN and on NBCSN would take into account the Spanish language ratings for football matches in this country and realize there are more people watching the sport than you think there are. There's an audience, potential audience for you if you talk more about our sport, that you could bring into your network and into your programs. Some of them are dinosaurs. They don't want to think that way, but I wish they would look at these ratings and see how many viewers even just random games are attracting.
Good timing, Kartik, because that was the one point I forgot to mention on the debate we had a couple of weeks ago about whether or not soccer is a niche sport in the United States. And that was the one thing I forgot to mention was were in terms of the Spanish language numbers for soccer. If you look at the Spanish language numbers, you can see, in my opinion, that soccer is not a niche sport. It is a mainstream sport. It's just not in the mainstream conversation.
I agree with that. I actually 100% agree with that. And I wish I had brought it up or we had gone there, because my point is, it is, if you look at those numbers, but the coverage on the opinion, the things that kind of sway opinion, the television programs on ESPN and FS1 and these other networks don't reflect that. So somehow we need to break through the glass ceiling and tell them and say, hey, you need to cover soccer. Look, there are important topics. You know, the whole Cavani Neymar thing at PSG. If that had happened in American sports, they would be all over it. They'd be spending days on it. Mm-hmm. The controversy about who takes that penalty kick. And there is a significant audience in this country interested in that they're neglecting. So maybe it's their loss. Maybe as time goes on, these shows on Univision and Telemundo will become the mainstream shows if they don't pay attention to this.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's move on to listener mailbag. And the first one is from Ian Jett through Twitter. And he says, I have a few thoughts on the World Soccer Talk podcast from last week. He says, NBC has Mike Tirico. They want to give Arlo White a break from play-by-play. Also, I agree, says Fox should use the World feed for the Facebook Live broadcast instead of the commentary from Mario Melchiot and Brian Dunseth.
Yeah, I liked the job Dunny did on those broadcasts, so I'd like to keep him on there. Maybe he should be partnered with someone else. On the Tirico thing, yeah, I'm kind of curious as to why we haven't seen Tirico pop up on Premier League coverage at all. Maybe he will at some point in the future, but he's had Olympics and the Open Championship golf and I guess probably NFL, and I don't really see him besides that.
Yeah, I'm sure he'd love to do it, and it's one of those things that it could cause a problem if they did bring him in, and he was such a big success that they'd probably wonder then, okay, well, what are we going to do kind of with Arlo?
I've been surprised. He hasn't been used very much on their golf coverage. And for years, when ABC and ESPN obviously are the same, have the same parent company. For years, when ABC had PGA Tour rights, rights to some PGA Tour tournaments before they lost those rights, he hosted their golf coverage. So he's just not being used. There was always the critique of Tirico when he was at ESPN that he was overexposed, that they used him on every sport. He did college basketball. He did the NBA. He did college football. He did Thursday night college football games. He did NFL. He did soccer. He did everything but tennis. He did golf. He probably didn't do baseball. But there were critiques, columns written that he was suffering from overexposure. So maybe NBC is conscious of that, and they're just keeping his schedule more manageable.
Yeah, at the same time, though, too, you could argue that Arlo White, in terms of overexposure at NBC, I mean, do an average of 2 to 3 games a weekend. So, but let's move on. The next comment is from AFC in NYC through Twitter, and he says that a big problem for NBC Sports are days like today. And he's looking back, I think, last week or a week before. He says, Man United will spank Crystal Palace, and there are no other Premier League games on TV. I'm watching the Bundesliga and Ligue 1 instead. If NBC Sports wants to slow the growth of the Premier League in the United States, lack of choice and greed are the ways to do it. Because if I don't pay enough already for my cable bill, NBC Sports wants to make sure that I have to pay more for games I had in the past. And Kartik, before you mention anything on that, that's a perfect segue to go into our featured topic of the week. But before we do, any of the listeners, if you do have any questions, comments, feedback, you name it, we'd love to read it out on air. You can email us at web@worldsoccertalk.com, through Twitter at WSoccerTalk, or through Facebook at facebook.com/worldsoccertalk. Now, Kartik, the comment on Twitter from AFC and NYC is a perfect segue, because I'm here to argue that this Premier League season is one of the most unwatchable in many years, because there are too many one-sided blowouts. And just looking back at the last 7 game weeks of the Premier League season, now that we're in an international break, here are just some of the score lines. Man United 4, West Ham 0. Swansea 0, Man United 4. Liverpool 4, Arsenal 0. Man City 5, Liverpool 0. Watford 0, Man City 6. Man United 4, Everton 0. Stoke 0, Chelsea 4. Man City 5, Crystal Palace 0. Huddersfield 0, Spurs 4. Man United 4, Crystal Palace 0. Now, the one thing in common for all of these games is that it's a completely one-sided domination by the winning team and 0 goals scored by the opposition. And if you're a fan of Man United or Man City, like yourself, Kartik, you're probably on cloud 9. But for the neutrals and for the fans of the other teams getting just demolished, it's a complete turnoff.
Well, no. Actually, I would tell you, as a Man City fan, it's a complete turnoff, because I've not. It's not necessary for me to watch these games as closely or thoroughly as I previously have. I mean, I'll just be honest with you. I mean, you have concentration lapses as a fan, and you start channel surfing. And for me, I don't know what cable service people have, but FS1 is one channel below NBCSN, so I'm just like, yeah, I'll see what's going on in the Bundesliga. It can't be this bad. Now, of course, if Dortmund's playing, it's usually 4-0 or 5-0 also. But, Chris, this started last season. There was a 15-point gap between 7th and 8th place in the league. And there are so many people who – and I don't quite get this culture in this country. So many people who like leagues more than they like clubs and teams. And I think it comes from college sports where
NFL –
Yeah, or they are for NFL, or they become SEC fans or ACC fans. We see it in soccer. MLS fans won't watch NASL. NASL fans won't watch MLS. And both sets of fans have stereotypes about the other league, which are, to me, completely off base. There are so many Premier League fans in the United States who have argued with me over the last 6 months about how great the league is, how competitive it is, and what I cite the 15-point gap between 7th and 8th. Oh, it was a one-off. All the bottom teams in England are better than the bottom teams in Germany and Spain, which, by the way, I don't believe that at all. I think a club like Wolfsburg, a club would not have struggled the way they did it in the Bundesliga last season in the Premier League, when you consider how bad the bottom of the Premier League was. You had a team that finished 8th in the league last season on 46 points. Just think about that. These games, this started last season, were games, they weren't 4-0 and 5-0, but there were they were fewer and fewer upsets where teams who were 12th or 13th or 14th in the league beat Chelsea. It was, to me, pretty amazing the run Chelsea went on. It was a historic run considering they dropped so many points early in the season, and they finished with, I think, the second or third most points in Premier League history. But that was to me, an indictment of the quality of the league. And then you saw it Spurs, the way they started the season poorly, and then from middle of September on, probably had one of the best runs until the end of the season in Premier League history and finished second. Mm-hmm. The league has gotten less and less competitive, and it doesn't seem to make sense because with the TV money that's flown in, or that's flowed into the league from the domestic TV package, there's disputes over the foreign TV money. We've talked about that last week or the week before, and that's to be resolved. That's a topic of discussion actually this week within the Premier League. But you would think that the league would have become more competitive. We had the great story of Leicester. I think we had in Slaven Bilic's first year, West Ham, they finished 7th, but they were pushing 4th or 5th until the very end of the season. Now, there's just not – the gap is enormous. Yeah. It is more likely you're going to see Real Madrid drop points if you watch a Real Madrid game on VN Sports than any of these teams, Chelsea, Man United, Man City, Tottenham, unless they're playing one another.
Well, that's the thing, though, too, is that the TV money has gotten much bigger. So you would think that the clubs, I mean, the other 14 clubs or, you know, other 16 clubs, however you look at it, would have more money to spend, which they are, so they can go out and get better players. But what's happened is the opposite, where the TV revenue has gotten so huge in the Premier League, the clubs now are more risk adverse. They don't want to open up the games too much in case they lose and get relegated, missing out on, on millions. So as a result, there's less creativity. Instead, they're focusing more on the shape on the pitch and many times parking the bus and just trying to have a lot of boring games, a lot of nil-nil games.
I can't believe how bad Southampton is, for instance. And when I go through the league, Chris, and I start thinking with friends that I talk to who could be relegated this season, I come up with a list of like 10 teams. Yeah. That was never the case before. And I'm thinking to myself, look, Brighton isn't particularly strong. Huddersfield isn't particularly strong. And Newcastle, we know Rafa wasn't able to spend any money. But the three teams who came up, they might stay up because the league is so poor. You might have actually all three newly promoted teams stay in the division, as crazy as that sounds, because, I think you're right. Risk aversion. Look, a club like yours, Swansea, we're known for playing good football. Now I think they're just like any other club that's trying to grind out results. Once they give up a goal, they give up three or four. Unlike if they don't give up a goal like against Spurs, then they're able to see out a very boring 0-0 draw.
Right, yeah.
But that's kind of the norm in the league. I don't mean to pick on Swansea.
Oh, no, no.
Yeah,
trust me, I'll pick on them. I mean, to me, it's very pragmatic. And it's not just Swansea. I mean, like you mentioned Southampton, I mean, Crystal Palace, of course, but Swansea, West Ham, many others. It's a very pragmatic style. And to me, even as a Swansea City supporter for my entire life, it's getting really difficult watching that team. I will watch every game. I'll watch every minute. I'll be there. But even for me as a Swansea fan, I'm getting bored. So for the neutral or fans of other clubs, you know, I mean, it must be really difficult. I mean, who wants to watch that? The other thing, Kartik, is to compound the issue. NBC Sports Gold makes the experience worse because in the past, if you were watching a blowout and you wanted to change the channel to a different channel, maybe from NBCSN on a Saturday morning between 10 and noon Eastern time, you could flip over to CNBC. Sometimes, even a couple of years ago, you could flip over to USA. You'd have three games on at once. So even if the game was boring or a blowout, you could switch a channel and watch. watch the matches. Now there are far fewer fewer choices available on TV because NBC Sports Gold has gobbled up usually three or four games a weekend. So if you don't have NBC Sports Gold, you're more than likely then to look for other games on. Maybe it's the Bundesliga, or maybe it's La Liga or Serie A. So it's actually in some ways hurting NBC Sports, having NBC Sports Gold, because of all these blowouts, there's far fewer alternatives in the Premier League. And the TV numbers reflect that too, because the Premier League has seen a recent dip in viewership in the United States. It's averaging about 442,000 viewers on all networks since the start of September. And this represents a 25% decrease in viewership from the average from the month in August, which was 588,000. So even the TV numbers show a sharp decline in viewership in the U.S.
Yeah, I think people are beginning to tune this thing out, and I'm just hopeful that the fans that argue with me all the time that the reason Premier League teams don't do well in Europe is because the league is so strong and they have to be competitive in the league and the games are more competitive and the teams in Spain and Germany don't have competitive games at the weekend, which is bunk, has always been bunk to me. But I hope they realize this year if the Premier League teams don't do well in Europe and get knocked out in the round of 16 again of Champions League, that those teams just aren't very good by the standard of top European clubs. Or maybe they're right and an English team's going to win the Champions League this year or make it to the finals or the semifinals, because Man United and Man City don't have to really worry about what Watford's going to is going to bring them, or Southampton or Stoke at the weekend, because there's such a enormous gap in quality in this league. You know, I'm at a loss to even tell you beyond the top six teams, because I think we've come to the conclusion that the top four teams are the two Manchester teams, Chelsea and Spurs, and then there's a bit of a gap, and then Arsenal and Liverpool are fifth and sixth. But in most seasons, they'd be in the top four. They're that good, right? That I can't even tell you who the seventh best team in the league is. I can't even begin to tell you. Maybe it's Watford. Maybe it's West Brom, because this is the way that Pulis has always played. And or Burnley, yeah, under Sean Dyche, who've gotten a lot of points away from home. They're the only team that's able to kind of compete with the top teams from the group below. Yeah, maybe it is them, actually, based on that. Yeah. I don't know. The league, to me, is and this isn't NBC's fault. The league is becoming less compelling, less competitive. But NBC's decision to push NBC Sports Gold has then taken the games that would be competitive between teams that are not in the top six against lower teams, let's say a Burnley-Southampton game or a Stoke-Crystal Palace game. It's taken it off your television. Mm-hmm. And yeah. Then and encouraged channel surfing to where you're watching the Bundesliga or you're watching La Liga.
And it's ironic, too, because the Premier League now has more money in that league than they've ever done in the past before. So you would imagine that the quality in the league would be much better. But the quality is better, but only among, like, what, the first, like, two or three or four teams. And then everyone else is just trying to catch up. And it just
I was wrong about this, because I would say the caveat I had last year when I was arguing with people on Twitter and other social media about the quality of the league. And I would say, hey, you guys are short selling Germany and Spain. Those are better leagues than England. When they would tell me, oh, well, the bottom teams in England were all better than the bottom teams in Germany, and which I again thought was absolute rubbish, I would qualify by saying, look, with the amount of TV money that's flowing into the Premier League to each club, I think next season your Swansea's, your Stokes, everybody will be much better and be playing at a higher level, will probably be would probably qualify from Europe from other leagues. But no, that's not the case at all. I don't know what's happened. I guess you've probably nailed it on the head, Chris, which is everyone's becoming more risk averse because you lose that TV money if you get relegated. So what it's done is it's actually encouraged teams to play more negatively and more defensively so they don't fall out of the league.
Exactly. And in some ways too, Crystal Palace make things look a whole lot worse than they are. I mean, when you have a team that's that bad, that's letting in that number of goals. But it's not just Palace. It's many other teams above them too that are just getting hit, you mean, with 6-0, 5-0, 4-0. And there aren't that many like 4-4 games or 4-3 games, unless you're Leicester and Arsenal at the beginning of the season. But there aren't that many kind of high-scoring, back-and-forth, competitive between two-team games. It's either kind of 1-0s or, you mean, 1-1s, 2-1s, and 5-0s, 6-0s. And we've had 10 blowouts in this league, the ones I mentioned before, like that long list, just in the first 7 weeks. So
so those are all games where the winning side won by more than 4 goals, and they were clean sheets.
Exactly.
That's a remarkable statistic. I mean, yeah. And again, this has been the criticism that fans of England, of the English league, and again, this is an American thing. These aren't English fans who have these arguments. It's American fans of the Premier League because they're into the whole culture of leagues and this league being better than that league and et cetera, which comes from American college sports and comes from the NFL, as you mentioned. That they would say, well, why would you watch Barcelona or Real Madrid? They win every game 4-0 or 5-0 in Spain. Well, actually, Real Madrid has dropped a bunch of points early in the season, if you haven't noticed. Right. And Bayern Munich over in Germany has dropped a bunch of points. Now, Bayern in Germany, even when they've been dominating the league the last few years, would win a lot of 3-2, 2-1 type games. They weren't winning a lot of games 5-0. But unfortunately, that made it even more frustrating to watch, honestly, Chris, because you knew they were going to win the game in the end, right? Mm-hmm. But I don't know. Do you think the Premier League cares about this? Do you think they feel like they have an international image problem? Or do they feel like it's more important to have their top brands, their top clubs, dominant to where they pick up more global casual fans? I mean, do you think from a league level there's any concern about this?
Yeah, it's the latter. So I don't think they care as much about these blowouts, and they're focused more on the major teams that are going to generate the most number of fans globally. And we talked about this in last week's show too, in terms of the Premier League having discussions about trying to, rather than equally share the money among all 20 teams for international TV rights, giving a larger share to, on merit, I mean, the top six would get much, much more in money.
Right.
So I think it's really, they should be focused. They should be worried about this as a trend. I don't think they are, though. And I think they're just focused on generating more money, which they are, and generating more viewers, which they are. So as well as sponsorships and everything else.
I have to say that this is a real concern for me, particularly at this moment, because Brexit's coming down the pike, and people just assume things will be okay. I'm not making that assumption. I'm not making the assumption that guys that don't require work permits, who are from the Netherlands or Belgium or France, particularly those three countries, or Spain, those four countries, these outstanding Western European countries that produce a lot of non-national team quality, but quality players for the Premier League clubs from 7 to 20 aren't going to need work permits. There's just an assumption among a lot of Premier League fans that, oh, well, the Home Office will fix it so that they don't hurt the league. Well, why would they care whether they hurt a football league or not, right? Mm-hmm. Constituents breathing down their neck about immigration. So I have this concern that the Premier League is already going to take a step back because of Brexit, and that Brexit would impact teams 7 through 20 far more than 1 through 6, because 1 through 6, the guys they sign anyway, are going to be national team caliber players who get work permits naturally because they're playing for their national team. So seeing this gap already before that, the new immigration laws, and there will be new immigration laws, kick in the UK, whether the Home Office decides to enforce them on football clubs or not is a different matter. But it really is a concern to me, because, I mean, I decry this culture of promoting leagues and et cetera, but it is my favorite league. It is the league I have the closest connection to. It is the league I watch the most closely. I watch it more closely than I watch my own domestic leagues, MLS and NASL and USL. So I think there are a lot of warning signs that the greed at the Premier League, which is greed of the top six clubs, is preventing them from doing the things they need to do. And this is a thing I've gotten into this argument recently, Chris, with American fans who want pro rel in this country. I want pro rel in this country. And then they cite what goes on in England. And I've said, whoa, whoa, whoa. Okay, if you want pro rel in an open system, I'm all for it. But part of me just says, let's leave MLS as is. If we're going to implement what's happened in the Premier League since 1992, I don't want to sound like David Kahn, but I guess I am sounding like David Kahn. Look at the German system. Look at the way it's been done there and in some other countries, and keep clubs as kind of community-based institutions where they keep ticket prices low and affordable. We don't. That's another racket of the Premier League, is with all this increased money from TV, would think they would be able to keep ticket prices in check, but they're not. And there were a lot of fans in the United Kingdom, you know this, Chris, that have just tuned out on the league, and they're watching non-league football. They're watching lower league football, but they don't the league is now detached from them, and it's basically like this global league that just happens to play its games, this global super league with all this money flowing around and almost entirely foreign owners and foreign coaches that happens to play its games in English cities.
Yeah, in many ways, the Premier League is one of Great Britain's best exports. So right. I think in terms of Brexit and immigration laws, I think there will be some wiggle room there too, where the British government will look at ways to maybe to grant some exceptions. Again, we don't know. It's so far off whether or not that would happen. But I seem to think that there would be some wiggle room where they were trying to get something done. And in terms of the Premier League, at the end of the day, whether it's the Premier League or MLS, it's all based on greed. And at the end of the day, you know, I mean, it's we, the consumers, that are the ones that are getting screwed in terms of having to pay the exorbitant prices for tickets to Premier League matches. And it's unfortunate. I mean, really. But yeah, I think the Premier League has a lot of things to look at, whether or not they will or not. We'll have to wait and see. And how they fix it, I'm still surprised. I mean, I want to finish this off on this note, Kartik. I'm still surprised that no matter how much money the Premier League has, how few of the major top stars in the world are coming to the Premier League.
Yeah, that's
they're still going to Spain.
Yeah, I mean, I think with the exception of Alexis Sanchez and Ibra in the last few years, and Ibra's towards the end of his career, you haven't had one of those top names come into the league since 2014. And I thought the new TV contract would open things up, and it really hasn't. Mm-hmm. No English club is able to bring in the top stars for whatever reason, and I can't explain it. Maybe that changes, but that to me is actually also surprising. So you have all these other issues we're discussing, and you don't have the Ronaldo, Messi, Neymar level player coming into the league to be kind of an anchor for marketing purposes. So there's a lot to sort out for the Premier League.
Absolutely. So, Kartik, where can listeners find you on the internet?
You can find me at KKFLA737 on Twitter. You can find me on Facebook, Google+, all those usual places, but with my name, Kartik Krishnayer. And then, of course, at World Soccer Talk, worldsoccertalk.com.
Awesome. Well, thanks for listening. You can get a new episode of the World Soccer Talk podcast every Thursday. Every episode is released on SoundCloud, YouTube, Stitcher, iTunes, TuneIn, Audio Boom, and worldsoccertalk.com. If you like the show, share it with your friends on social media and give us a review on iTunes. And Kartik, what should they do?
Enjoy your football.